employees in those employers that will be back next year asking for the same treatment. And in essence, this would set up a process whereby we would be probably piecemealing this for the next, you know, two or three legislatures. Because these employees, once they become retired, not getting health insurance, I'm sure would be back saying, why are we treated differently now? Everybody else gets health insurance, we don't. And that's not fair, it's inequitable, let's deal with that equity issue then. So I guess my response would be, you know, either we deal with it or we don't, I guess, and let's deal with it consistently as you would the legislative employees or not. But I think this would set up a different class of employee that would be not only, you know, create a different class for more administrative and more confusion and more problems in the future, but it also would set up something that we'd be dealing with in the future.
Representative Baker.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the point that I was going to make was just made. In our city, for example, just in the school system, as Betty knows, you have 9-month secretaries in elementary schools. In junior high schools, you have 10-month secretaries. In senior high schools, you have 11-month secretaries. Under the PERS system, each one's time is accrued depending upon the number of months that they work. And the problem that I have with this legislation is just pointed out that in all those political subdivisions in 160 cities and municipalities and boroughs around the state, we're going to have a nightmare. Just you know, you have Jane Doe lives next to Jane Smith that works for one public entity, is treated one way, and this public employee is treated a different way, and they're in the same retirement system. And I think that we either need to do it for everybody, but we need to treat people the same. And so I have some real problems in treating one public employee that's in a retirement center different than another. So that's an editorial comment, not necessarily a question.
Thank you, Representative Baker.
Mr. Chairman, I would also like to point out, whereas this bill deals with part-time employees, or those employees working half a day for a full year, this does not deal with the employees working a full day for half a year. Seasonal employees that work 6 months work as much on-the-job time as a part-time employee in that year, but only get a half a year of credit because they happen to be working full days for 6 months. This whole issue of half-time versus full-time, that's why our belief is the system as it's established gives a day of service for a full day worked, and that's kind of the way it goes, and it just seems to flow. Trying to get into this in this manner sets up inequities that that we can even see now, let alone those that we don't recognize.
Mr. Chairman, I would readily admit that the easiest way to manage the employees, if you are looking at some literal definition of equity, is the way in which the state is doing it now in the simple number of hours. But we know that in the real world, that creates inequities. And while, as we try to change, establish a new public policy and establish a new direction because of the changes in the workforce, in the marketplace, I would also agree that there is going to be perhaps a nightmare for some folks, but change creates perhaps confusion, new directions, and new forces at work. We are trying to do that. We recognize that may occur, but we feel that this will be a benefit to communities as a whole, and certainly to the state. Now, in regard to the teachers and the classified, I do see that as an issue which must be answered here, because teachers, when they sign their contract, they are working for the entire school year. And in Juneau, for instance, we are looking, because we've run out of school space and we don't have enough money to build all the schools we need, we're looking at a whole new way of doing school here. There are several options before the community. We may have 3 months on and a month off. We may have 3 weeks on and a week off. We don't know yet what we're going to do, but whatever that turns out to be, and if that means that the teachers will certainly have to respond to whatever it is, it may mean that they have to work all year round, but their vacation time is broken up in a whole new way. And when they sign that contract for a full year, they are signing on for that entire year, however the district decides it's going to work it, just as the classified staff signs on for a whole year in a full-time position. So I would submit to you that the school teachers and their relationship to the classified employees is they are not getting a full year's credit for just 9 months' work. However it is that the school district will decide to run that school year, they will be there in that full-time position for the entire year. So I would suggest to you that while this, as we look at changing the system, the way that we're doing it, we can talk about possibilities for inequities that arise, but we do want to make a policy determination here that part-time employment is something that should be treated fairly. It should not, we should provide no disincentives so that the state as an employer encourages people to do that. This bill does that. It removes current inequities. And if down the line, as we find transition taking place, change taking place, that happens because other inequities are recognized, we agree that that will happen and that that is a beneficial thing. And so for people who administer the system like Bob, this may indeed look like a very bad idea and a nightmare, but from a public policy point of view, we think it is definitely something that we want to step forward on.
Well, if you think it's a good public policy move, why don't you have the bill address all, not just state employees?
We would certainly be open to that, Mr. Chair.
I mean, at least that, you know, if you're talking an equity issue and you really want to argue that this is a good move, to me, you would have better ground arguing it for the entire system, not just for certain.
Well, we would welcome such an amendment to the bill, and we were trying to be conservative.
Fran?
Mr. Chairman, if this is conservative, I
mean. I'm in the wrong room.
Mr. Chairman, I...
Oh, you screaming liberal Republicans.
I also believe that perhaps some thought should be given to the seasonal employees, too. That is an issue that still is out there, regardless of the employer issue. You still have your different types of part-time employees, whether they work a half a day per day or they work 6 months per year. They're still employees that will work the same amount of time in a year but get different treatment because of that.
Well, you certainly could argue that, but I think those are two separate issues myself. I think you're talking about somebody that goes fishing in the summertime. And example in Valdez, for example, is the DOT people that work for snow removal and whatnot in the wintertime. And a lot of them, instead of working maintenance in the summer, will quit and go fishing or something, do something construction or whatever. And while you are talking about the same number of hours, you're not talking about the same period of time in somebody's life.
I think, Mr. Chairman, that, you know, you can probably look at each of the various agencies for the state, certainly, and other employers may have similar situations, where the seasonal employment totally depends upon the department. The Department of Fish and Game, as an example, hire their seasonals all summer, so they're not fishing. Now, what they're doing in the wintertime, I don't know, but that's when the job is available. And they either work the job because it's that seasonal job, or they don't work it. It can be said the same for part-time jobs. They work the job because that's a part-time position, or they don't work
it. Now a seasonal employee that works 3 months, that's what they get, is 3 months.
3 months worth of credit.
So it takes them 4 years to get a year.
Yes, sir.
That's a long time to accumulate credit, and I would think that person should be thanked for the stick-to-itiveness, 4 years of seasonal work. Deserves something. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think the whole healthcare industry needs to be looked at, and I think people look at the investment stick-to-firm. they look for long-term benefits. I see this as progressive legislation, and perhaps it's enlightening us to see the inequities around the different subdivisions of the state.
I'm sorry, Representative Bruckman, did you address me?
The committee as a whole. Thank you.
I realize Representative Allman would like to move this bill. I don't think this bill is going to the floor this year anyways. It'd be my desire to keep this bill in committee and look and see if discuss further, I think, the policy issue and whether it should be broadened to include all people or whether we should throw this puppy out, as Representative Williams said. And I would tend to lean towards addressing all employees, no matter who they work for, myself. But with the time constraints that we have, unless someone else would like to move this bill immediately in its present form or with this amendment, I would rather keep it for right now.
I think there's a lot of good theory here, but I think we need to look at the whole policy rather than fragment the policy, and I think we could do that in the interim.
Mr. Chairman, where does this bill go after
finance?
I think it would be better here than in finance for the interim. What do you think?
Well, I guess I have a question in my mind. If I can ask for clarification, when you talk about addressing the whole policy issue, as I have seen, unless you're referring to the political ramifications of including all members, all employers that are members of PERS, the policy issue is very simple. People who work part-time now are treated inequitably. That's it, very simple. If we're going to treat them like we treat full-time employees, we will make the changes in this bill. Now, when it comes down to dickering over the fiscal note or changes the long-term effects to the system of doing this or that or other, those are all technical considerations, it seems to me, but the policy issue itself is very simple.
To respond, since I brought it up, I think you hit the nail right on the head. The policy issue is, do we treat all part-time employees under PERS in the same manner in any political subdivision? That is the policy decision, not just a piece of those. That's exactly what.
Mr. Chairman, she even sounds like Fran Allman. That's amazing. That was scary. If my eyes were closed, I would have seen her.
On the other hand, I agree that it's a policy issue. I think it's going to take longer than just one interim to make wise decisions and to make those choices that we're going to need to make someday. In the meantime, these part-time employees are still suffering.
I was going to suggest that if the committee feels that sections 1 through 4 of the bill are acceptable, and it is invested in the retirement system, which is unacceptable, that we would be amenable, find it a friendly amendment if we removed the sections 5 and 6 relating to PERS vesting. At least in this way, we would, for a number of the issues surrounding part-time employment, we would be providing equity for those employees. If that is the entire concern of this committee.
I have to admit, Mr. Chairman, I don't have my bill in front. I'm missing it that bad.
We won't put in my hear this bill anymore, but
it's a bill that won't die.
Pardon me? I'll entertain a motion, Representative.
Mr. Chairman, I would make a motion that we put this in subcommittee. That's all you want.
House Bill 42 in subcommittee. Is there objection to that motion? Do I have volunteers for that subcommittee?
No.
Representative Baker? Do I have other volunteers?
Representative Choquette.
I'm going to bring you to the meeting.
You would?
Yes.
Representative Bruckman?
Three's not enough?
No.
Not for the interim.
Representative Moyer and Representative Cabina?
Subcommittee of the whole.
Representative Baker, would you chair that subcommittee for us, sir?
Sure.
And I assure you, and would you please assure the representative that we will not carry this bill in subcommittee? We will hear it further.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Is Eric here?
No, he's not.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move to consider action on HB 67. Seems we forgot to put the goldfish in there.
That was my concern, Mr. Chairman.
Seems to me that the record will reflect that they have rights too.
Did we have reptiles too?
Just fish, Representative Bruckman.
I'd like to take up House Bill 55 at this time.
155?
155. And the only thing I want to do, this bill is not going anywhere either, but I would like to put in your packet, you should have a blank CS, or a CS, or 155, debated 429.
Blanket CS?
I don't have it. That's only two.
Is that your 55, 57?
155, Representative Bruckman.
429.
429.
Chair wish to adopt this.
The only thing I'd like to do is adopt the CS and then put these bills behind us so that we can work from the CS during the interim.
I would make that motion, Mr. Chairman, to adopt the CS.
There is a motion to adopt the CS, State Affairs for 155, dated 4/29/91 by Bannister. Is there objection to the motion?
I think adoption is a good thing, Mr. Chairman.
Adoption is good.
Would you include this? Testimony in your packet, please. Is there people that wanted to testify on this bill today? Would you like to make a statement, sir?
Yes.
Come right up to the table. Eric, we don't need you. You come sit over here.
That's dry.
No, you just be quiet.
Great.
My name is Rod Wilson. I'm with Department of Transportation Public Facilities, Division of Engineering and Operations Standards. I just want to kind of give you a real, very brief oversight of what's coming on. There were some federal laws.
Very brief, Mr. Wilson.
Yes, there were federal laws passed on July 26th of 1990 that adopted the Americans with Disability Act, which is a federal law providing equal access to facilities for people with disabilities. I just want to say briefly that if we do not do something on the state level, the federal laws are going to supersede our state laws. And
what's our timeline?
The federal regulations come into effect July 26th of this year.
Well, we're not going to have a bill adopted,
that's right.
Obviously.
That's right. One of the
If we pass a bill next year, will they then be able to go into effect over the federal regulations?
They will help. There's that interim of time when the state will be subject to litigation.
Well, then why hasn't there been a proposal from the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities on this matter then? Why have you not introduced a bill, or your department introduced a bill,
Mr. Chairman,
this is the timeline that we're up against?
Mr. Chairman, to be quite honest with you, we don't even know the outcome yet of all those regulations. Those regulations are being drafted right now.
But if you had a requirement, you knew about the requirement, and that these regulations were going to supersede us, why didn't the administration propose a bill on this matter?
Mr. Chairman, we've been working with Representative Brown.
Well, I've asked Representative Brown at least four different times if this bill was ready to be heard because of comments that she was trying to get and everything, that it was not ready until just recently. So I guess I'm a little irritated that you come before the committee and say on July 1st, if we don't have a bill passed, that we're going to have to follow federal guidelines. And if he's saying that so that we're just going to put this bill out or something, I don't understand.
No, Mr. Chairman, I'm not doing that at all. I'm merely stating that the federal process is going to affect on July 26th.
We'll continue, Mr. Wilson. Anything else? Is this, have you read this committee substitute?
Yes, I have.
Is this, in the department's eyes, a better bill than the original bill?
Yes, it is.
Is this a bill, then, that you would recommend we work from during the interim to...
Yes, I would, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. I'm sorry to be a little nasty there, but yes.
If I might, Mr. Chairman.
You can do anything you want, Representative Choquette.
Thank you. How is it that the federal government can be still in the middle of drafting something that's going to be implemented by July 1st?
The department, Federal Department of Transportation and Justice have until July 26, 1991 to implement regulations that augment the passage of the ADA bill that was put forth in July 26 of 1990.
So there's no period for review? They're still drafting it, yet
we've been reviewing and commenting on them since early March.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's part of the problem.
That's okay.
Seems to be highly irregular, but it doesn't surprise me.
Nothing surprised me.
Especially today, Representative Chairman.
Sorry, it's so tough there, Mr. Wilson. Thank you. Did any of you ladies wish to say anything?
Yeah.
I'm going to be a lot nicer. It's easier to be harder on a guy than it is, lady. I'm still male chauvinist.
Is chauvinist on us?
I know it. Representative Bruckman, and for you, I'm going to make an exception, and I'll be as nasty as I was. Ma'am.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Judy Knight. I'm Director of the Employment Security Division, Department of Labor. Our interest in this bill is that we are the housing agency or the support agency for the Governor's Committee on Employment of People with Disabilities. That committee is very concerned about the American Disabilities Act and has been very active in tracking that federal legislation. And just recently sponsored one of the original drafters to come to the state and explain to employers the impacts of that bill. And the professor was here in Juneau and Anchorage and I believe spoke in Fairbanks. In the federal act, it did mandate that the regulations come forth from the Department of Justice, Department of Transportation, and I believe there's one other federal agency involved. And it was mandated in the act because it does traditionally take federal agencies many years and many months to draft the regulations. And so there was a deadline imposed in the bill. It is my understanding that those regulations will be circulated and for public comment for a significant period of time and probably will not be formally adopted before the end of the year. There are also staggered dates in the federal law that says that some of these provisions do not take effect until 1992, 1994, and 1996. So I don't think the state is under a significant burden. It is something we do need to address. And one of the things in the committee substitute, I would guess one of the significant differences between the original version of the bill and the committee substitute that you've adopted is the fact that they have put the responsibility for advising DOT and for promulgating regulations to come up with a priority process of how funding should be spent and what projects should be of most immediate concern. And I feel very strongly that the present committee is already in effect in the state can do that and do that very well without creating a new council or a new task force. And so I believe that is a very economical as well as efficient and effective way to address the requirements that the state will have to face.
Ms. Knight, is this committee substitute a better bill to work from during the interim than the original?
Absolutely.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
One other thing, Mr. Chairman, we would be happy to provide the committee with an outline of the American Disabilities Act. And it's all. I think we also have an executive one-page overview. If you would be interested in that,
yeah, that would be very helpful.
The other thing is the Committee on People on Employment of People with Disabilities, and that's a mouthful. Will be meeting in Seward in early June to address some of these issues. And if members of the committee would like to attend that meeting, we would certainly be happy to extend an invitation.
Thank you. We'll see if the committee gets those dates.
I will be happy to.
It does happen to be the chairman's district, which might be a good place to.
Mr. Chairman, that might be an excellent time to hold a.
For our subcommittee.
A meeting of the subcommittee to deal with this issue.
Would you get us those dates?
I'll be happy to.
If you can, and we'll try to do it.
Fisher, right.
Thank you, Ms. Stein.
It has nothing to do with it.
Would you sign the register, please?
All right.
Was there anyone else that needed to add anything? We're on a very short time. No? Sorry, Mr. Wilson. All right, this, House Bill 155 and 157, the appropriation with it will remain in with the committee as a whole. And, oh, no, I take that back. We have a CS before us, and it is adopted, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Was there a motion for that?
I so move.
Did we make a motion already?
No.
All right, we have a CS before us now.
For 155, not 157.
Bruising.
All right, 308, we're not going to be able to do. Rip Sam Grunberg's not here. Eric, thank you for that expert testimony.
Anytime.
Next thing I'd like to take up.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah?
They've been waiting on 308 for four meetings.
Who's here?
Bush? Was here to testify. He just had 30 seconds. If you'll remember, he was the one that said we can do this in 30 seconds.
We just called him to get him back over here. Did we the number?
I think this bill can be cleaned off our records in 30 seconds.
You want to deal with the Grunberg Amendment?
Oh, no, I'd like to move it without that, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, I haven't seen that. Do you know that?
Yes, you've seen it. We had standardies. Representative Shokat.
Mr. Chairman, I would move House Bill 308 with individual recommendations.
There is a motion to move House Bill 308 with individual recommendations. You'll notice it only, this very. All it says is change adoption to filing by Lieutenant Governor.
Right.
But I wonder if that, I wonder if this bill does, puts the Lieutenant Governor even stronger in that position. Well, judiciary gets it anyways.
Well, I would object to
there's,
that.
There is an objection.
Just for the purpose of discussion, I don't agree with subpoenaing the Lieutenant Governor here, but I think if a member of the committee wants to talk about an amendment, we should not try and move it out while he's not here.
Well, we put this amendment on one bill, and then we took it off, and now we're here on another bill.
I'm not going to say I agree with the amendment, but I think knowing of his interest, I think.
Mr. Chairman, can we move the amendment with the bill? Send the amendment over with the bill and let the judiciary do it?
Certainly can.
Max on his way?
Max is in on judiciary committee.
He now has the message that you have it on the table. He's going to come up or not.
We could do that. We could move the amendment. And then judiciary has to deal with it.
Right, right. I vote the amendment if they
can. Let's see if I got this right now. You're saying put the amendment on and send it without discussion?
Yeah. Well, we've talked about it. You know what the amendment does.
Yeah. But am I misunderstanding you now?
Says point blank, he doesn't have the authority to do what he's doing, what he says he's going to do.
It's a very controversial amendment, Mr. Chairman.
It's reported to me today by
sources who remain. Max wants to move his amendment. We don't agree with it. We can vote it down. I just object to his zipping a bill out of committee, knowing if his interest is.
Mr. Chairman.
We've threatened to do that all year. Wait till Max is going to.
Mr. Chairman, no, we haven't. Not seriously.
Now it's
Mr. Chairman, no, it's not serious. Mr. Chairman, I would submit that Representative Grunberg is a member of the Judiciary Committee. This bill is going to the Judiciary Committee. All he has to do is take offered in the House Judiciary, and the same amendment can be dealt with. Is my suggestion. I speak only in moving the bill in the interest of the fact that this is at the request of the governor. and I...
Well, you're not picking up my support there.
I'm telling you why I want to move the bill. Jeez, I'm going to shut up.
And I'm just looking at how I would feel. And if the committee wants to move out, okay, vote up. It'd be 4-1. I'm just maintaining my objection.
Mr. Chairman, I have to agree with Representative Moyer. I think that it's his, you know, it's his bill. He's interested in it, and his amendment. Mm-hmm. And if there's a fairness issue, I'd like to move it too, but I don't think it's fair to move it. I mean, we should move it over him if that's what we're going to do. That.
We're not moving under, Mr. Chairman. Once again, Representative Grunberg is a member of the Judiciary Committee.
No, sir.
Yes, he is. He's there now. And this amendment would be better offered in Judiciary than here.
Well, the thing is, he's offered it here, and I think we ought to give him until Friday morning. He'll be, you know, we have a meeting Friday.
What's your pleasure, Chairman?
Where else is this bill? Judiciary?
I can understand.
Well, I think it's too late for the bill anyways this year. Let's wait till Friday. Another bill to deal with. Let's wait till Friday. Plus, Bill 308 will be held over till Friday.
Doesn't matter.
Is there objection to that, Representative Cash?
Of course not, Mr. Chairman.
This is fair.
No stupid ones here.
All right.
No, but I didn't.
What
next
meant.
Bill I have before us is House Bill 289. Staff passed out of PS on 289. I believe, have you guys got a CS for 289?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, one? But it's right here.
Oh, there's a new one? Hey, what's wrong with the one we didn't know?
Oh, it disappears on your thumb.
Would you show them this section?
The changes that were made over this morning's version of the bill are on page 2. And if you take a look at lines 11 through 16.
No, I don't mind. I got the...
let's see. If you take a look at your original version, the LNC committee substitute, in the state affairs substitute that you've just received, subsection B has been omitted, and that was 4205-870.
What did you say that again, subsection B?
Yeah, subsection B.
Oh, B is in line?
Uh-huh. So, sub 1 of sub B has been omitted. So it no longer includes a long-distance carrier notifies the local exchange carrier. And
official.
Great.
On CF, you got D and E.
We skip C, Mr. Chairman.
No change in C.
There you go. Okay, why don't you go...
All right, here's what we did. We said... the discussion this morning said, what's going to happen to these letters?
Right.
What to the signature? Where they're going to be? This says, the local exchange carrier shall retain them for 2 years.
Okay. This is new from the old one, though. That was on
the yes.
Old,
you might want to have the old one sitting in front of you, mm-hmm. So you can see what we took out.
So there's additional copies of the amendments so you can compare.
Let's go back. We took out B in the old one. B1, excuse me. A long distance carrier notifies the local exchange that they have it. They don't notify them. They give them a copy of the request rather than that.
And they're leaving in too.
And then, yeah, it's renumbered, but it's still in there.
It's become one, right? D1 and 2 has become B. That's correct, isn't it?
Sorry.
Five, then B. Well, it still says B. That needs to be renumbered to. No, that's correct.
No, that's right.
Local exchange carrier may not process it till the local exchange carrier receives written request from the signer. That's the same, right? Yes, that's B above. And then we went to one, we got rid of one. Two becomes
B.
B.
Till the local exchange carrier receives written request by the consumer.
Right.
It's the same as it's two.
And C stays the same as C. And D?
It's been changed.
Is new.
D's been omitted on the old section.
The D has been omitted, and there's a new D. Okay, so this does two things. Number one, the exchange people, in other words, the local telephone company keeps the piece of paper. Mm-hmm. On E, it says a long distance carrier may, after giving a local exchange, 48 hours, and she don't care what, how much time really. Notice that a long distance carrier's expense can audit or audit by a third party. In other words, they can go in and look at them.
They may, not sure.
Yes, they may.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bruckman.
Thank you. The old D under the Commerce Fund.
Of course, Mary.
Could you give me your thoughts on why you're eliminating that? It made sense to me if they have a certificate to be a long distance carrier.
Give me a copy of this.
I just.
Representative Bruckman?
The old D made sense to me. I mean, if they're a certificated long distance carrier, are we now, since we eliminated that, allowing anybody to be a long distance
what D
carrier?
Does, the old D says someone who's applied for a certificate may. In other words, anybody that applies for a certificate can go out and start soliciting
people. But the requests become effective on the date they obtain a certificate.
This says, no, this does not allow them until they have been certified.
You eliminate all that. Why don't you say certified on the new?
That's right. So under D, it gives them permission to who are not certified yet, only who on the old D. It takes that permission away by eliminating that.
Okay, wouldn't we be more protective of the consumer, though, if we kept that language?
No, because, in other words, all they have to do is apply for a certificate and they can start soliciting before the APUC has ever got to look at it. The APUC has not certified them.
Right, but it says that it wouldn't become effective until they are certificated, which is, without that, some protection. I mean, I could go out and start getting signatures, signing up people right now.
No, I don't, that's not the intent. The intent is that nobody's allowed to solicit until the APUC says they're certified to do so.
Where does that say so in this language? It
doesn't specifically.
Shouldn't we have that then? If it doesn't speak to the subject, I would.
Tell me the address on that second house. So maybe that needs to be added in there.
I wouldn't move this anywhere until that was in there, Mr. Chairman. I would want that protection. I see your reasoning, and I'm not arguing what you said. It's just that by eliminating that paragraph, we've eliminated any protection that the consumer has. In my opinion.
Let's let Mr. Stoops have some comment. Could you call? Stoops?
Hey, Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Reed Stoops, and I'm here on behalf of GCI. It's unfortunate that everybody else is tied up in Senate State Affairs on the same subject as we speak. I'm just quickly taking a look, and I assume what you're talking about is what formerly was section D on page 2 of the House Labor and Commerce Committee substitute, which has been deleted in the State Affairs Committee substitute proposal. And our concern with the deletion of that provision is that it would effectively deny GCI the carriers that it has already signed up and will begin using GCI's service today as it's gone into effect. And I don't understand.
What would it deny GCI?
Well, because GCI did not get certificated until today. And over the past several weeks, they've been putting out mail outs like this one, which I'll pass around.
My question to you, though, is this, Reed. You are now certified.
Right.
So you are fine under this. We're not retroactively saying you have to go back and do something. You are covered under this just fine because you are now certified.
I guess I'd feel more comfortable if you put in a section that made it clear that signatures gathered over the past 30 days in anticipation of competition would not be challenged as a result of a provision like this, which now talks about signatures only once a company's been certified. I mean, GCI has essentially agreed that it would comply or has complied with the intent and spirit of this legislation in its solicitation in anticipation of today, but our attorneys are very concerned that might allow for litigation to go back and force us to start all over again.
And so we don't want to do that. We would certainly entertain the proper language to make sure that what is up, that
right,
that
yeah,
we're only talking about future and after this right, bill.
And the provision, Mr. Chairman, the provision that's written in the House Labor and Commerce Committee version was written to take care of the problem I just identified. We wouldn't have any concern if you protected us with some language and said in the future that was impermissible because it wouldn't apply to us. And I understand your potential concern, so it could be solved that way. But I think it would require an additional change to your substitute.
Okay, so, and let me restate this if I can for both your concerns. We want language that says, number one, we're talking about certified carriers. In other words, they are already certified, Representative Bruckman, not just anybody.
Right, or applied for certification.
No. That's what we changed in this one. We don't, what the comments I heard this morning said this. Somebody who just applies can go out and start soliciting.
Right.
And we're saying no.
Right.
We're saying just applying for something should not give you the right to do that. You should be certified. So not until the APUC has certified them. And that's what you want. You want to make sure it's not just anybody.
Right, like me or you. Right.
Exactly.
But my concern is now, if it's good for you, being non-certificated and going out and doing all that you've done, why isn't it good for another telephone? Maybe I'm changing my mind now. That's what I'm doing.
Well, you don't want to go, we don't want to pass legislation that goes back and tells somebody something you did yesterday was illegal.
That's not what I'm saying.
What you're saying is?
What's wrong with competition? You did it. Okay, you came up here and did it, so if you could do it, what's wrong with someone else doing it?
Mr. Chairman, to Representative Ruckman, I'm not arguing that point. I feel comfortable in the State Affairs and the Labor and Commerce version where that is permissible if it's if all these standards are being followed. So we have no problem with either alternative. I'm just trying to accommodate the chairman and still end up with a situation that doesn't jeopardize those signatures which GCI has.
And I would disagree with that. I would disagree with you, Representative Buckman. And the testimony I heard this morning said, how fair is it for somebody just to apply and then be able to go out and start soliciting people
right
before the APUC has ruled on their application.
Right.
So that's why I agree that we need to have language that says we're talking about somebody certified, not just anybody. And we also need to have language that says this was done in the past. Whatever's happened before this doesn't matter. And I think that's a good question for Representative Greenberg being a lawyer. In the draft CS that I have before me on
the Labor and Commerce CS?
Would you look at the Labor and Commerce CS? Yes. Do you have that?
Yeah.
All right, we've deleted section D.
Okay.
And what I do not want in this legislation is somebody to be able to go out and solicit people until they've been certified. And here it says somebody that has applied. Mm-hmm. So we deleted that section. Now, the concern I have is by deleting that section, does it mean that anybody can go out and apply? And that's not what I want. I want somebody not to be able to go out and solicit until after they've been certified by the APUC.
Right, but Representative Gruenberg, GCI, was just certified.
Let's do one point first. Or we could change, actually, D, to just say a company that has been certified.
That would eliminate any of the ambiguity.
Reed, are you looking at the old bill?
Right.
A company that has...
And then you have to make another conforming amendment too, Mr. Chair. That has been certified to provide.
And certified to provide long-distance telephone service, may collect written requests to change carriers, period. Not conditioned upon receiving certification.
The final sentence goes on line 17.
And line 17 does not need to be in one. Or scratched. All right, now, we could add another sentence here, Reed, that says, and let me tell you what Reed's problem is. They have already obviously gone out and solicited, but they weren't certified until today. So they are now certified. But the intent is not to give Alascom or anybody else a challenge for them to go and throw all these out. So would it be necessary? Would it be necessary to say, notwithstanding, and this section takes effect, but nothing in this section is to indicate that past practices before this came effective would be
grandfather rights. They grandfather rights.
In essence,
I think it's a conceptual, and they can do it different ways. But we need to have a new CS before us.
But my concern still is, if it was okay for them, GCI, what's wrong with prohibiting competition under the same scenario that they had? They weren't certificated yet.
Well, then you don't like the new amendment.
Well, I was the one that brought it up, but now I'm caught between my thoughts.
Well, you can't argue both ways, Betty. You got our one and
well, maybe.
No, she's raising the issue on both
saying?
Sides.
GCI did it. So what's wrong now with another firm of a similar stature in the country doing the same thing?
Well, my argument is this, that I don't think it is fair for them to be able to go out to anybody that applies until they've made a ruling that they are qualified, competent to provide that service.
In reality, as a consumer, I'd rather be protected from a flood of mail out.
That's what we're doing. Right. That's exactly what we're doing.
Right.
What you're saying is, yes, a company of stature would be okay, but a fly-by-night company wouldn't.
Is it?
I don't know how you tell the difference just by them handing in an application.
Mr. Chairman, isn't it kind of a chicken and egg situation? Because to get certified, don't they have to show that there's a public need? And the way they show the public need is by obtaining requests to change carriers. So isn't that one of the way you make your case before the APUC?
I don't think under the new competitive regs that showing of need is necessary anymore. I think one just has to show that they're fit, willing, and able to provide the service in the marketplace with the term mm-hmm. need.
And why should somebody be able to go out and start bugging people that have not been shown to be fit, willing, and able yet?
A lot of people like me.
You're a politician.
No, the airport, Harry Krishna's.
Oh, yeah. They're not fit. Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't say. Please strike that for the record. That's
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
I would move Bill 308 out with individual recommendations.
No,
wait a minute. I want to get this right. I want
to. You've got to have that bill. Conceptual amendment.
And 308, Max. That's your bill. I brought you
well,
in so that.
That's out of order. And I don't want this is the last committee referral on this bill, and I don't want a bad bill.
Yeah.
I don't want something that I
on
can't
the bill
justify.
We're discussing now, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Well, I agree. I was just stating that.
Well, you're out of order. Reed,
Mr. Chairman, before we take final action, am I also committed to testify on the other changes that are made, the other changes that are made on that page.
Okay, so we do have,
do you have a siesta?
Yeah. I think what we would like to do is make a motion to, to put D, the old D, back in that says, and I'm reading it from the old bill, line 13, a company that has been certified to provide long-distance telephone service may collect written requests to change carriers, period. Hmm. Then in the middle of line 15, we're crossing out the rest of that sentence. In collecting the conditional written request, the company shall comply with requirements imposed by long-distance carriers by this section. And then we're going to put another sentence that says...
I think there's a conceptual amendment. They can do it in different ways, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we're going to put another sentence in there on the, that says that nothing is going to go back, nothing in this bill is going to go back and invalidate what has happened beforehand. And we'll ask legal how to do that.
That will probably, just for your information, be another section that would go in the temporary acts that would contain that.
Okay, well, we'll ask legal how to do that. All right, Reed, do you have other questions?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The other three changes that I noted in the State Affairs Draft Committee substitute versus the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute, which is adopted, has to do with the way in which, or the timing in which a inter-exchange carrier can switch over a customer once a signature has been received. Under the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute, that happens one of two ways. Either the customer signs up with the long-distance carrier in a written form, and that long-distance carrier notifies the local exchange company that it has in hand a written authorization and is available for inspection, or the local exchange carrier can receive the written request directly from the customer. There's two different options. The first of those options has been taken away under the State Affairs draft, and the only option would be for the local exchange company to receive the signed authorization from the customer. And we have a lot of objection to that because it's going to mean dealing with local exchange companies all over the state. There's going to be a delay from the time that GCI or any other competitor receives the written authorization until it's forwarded and filed in some fashion by the local exchange company.
Okay, back up, Reed. I don't understand. Would you state this again? There's two ways you can do it. One is by them coming in and signing up with the local exchange.
Right.
Is that still in?
That part is still in. The part that's been deleted.
The part that's been deleted is which?
Is the way in which it's normally handled, where the carrier sends the customer an authorization form. You sign that authorization form. It goes back into the headquarters of the company that's requested it. At that point, that company is allowed to call exchange companies or notify them, wherever they happen to be in Alaska, that so-and-so is signed up as a customer. We have a written authorization on file, and therefore, they're then switched over. That option is taken away under the State Affairs.
Okay, but the only thing you have to do is take that written authorization and send it to the local exchange. You're talking maybe...
There's 17 local exchange companies.
Well, this is the thing that we talked about today. Who is going to keep these? And this says that the local exchange is going to keep this written notice. So that's in each local exchange. That's who has to make the change, right? Mm-hmm. So if I'm in Valdez and I sign up for GCI, my local exchange has to do it. I can either go in and sign up with them, or I can sign up with you. Now, if I sign up with you, you have to take that written me signing up or a copy of it and send it to the local exchange. Or fax it. There you have a copy of it. There's no time, but fax is as fast as a phone call.
Because, Mr. Chairman, our concern is that that's an issue that was debated at great length by the PUC. The PUC decided not to use that process.
No. Reed, the PUC testified this morning on teleconference that he said we had a valid point there, and that that very well may be the place for these things to be kept.
Right, but the commissioner or attorney also testified that he felt that way in the event that that GCI or another carrier would be able to sign up right away. I mean, have the local exchange companies turn on that particular customer, then there would be a period of time for GCI to send in that package of signatures to the local exchange companies. He said, yeah, that the local exchange company could be the should or could be the final depository. We don't have a problem with that. He distinguished that from his preference to allow the inter-exchange company to sign to begin service immediately upon receiving the signed authorization at their headquarters. I'm quite sure that he made that distinction clearly.
And I don't see any difference when you said when he received the signed authorization. The only difference is you can't pick up the phone and tell him to do it. You've got to fax him or send him a copy of the letter.
Right, and therefore there's going to be an unnecessary delay.
How much of a delay? How are you going to notify him to change it the way you do it, the way you envision doing it? Picking up the phone and telling him?
No, because it has to be, normally it would just be
pick up the phone and tell him. Right. So instead of picking up the phone, you pick up the fax machine and you fax them the letter with the signed authorization so that they have it right there on file. I don't see any delay, not 1 minute.
We're dealing with a couple hundred thousand of these things. And also, I guess, Mr. Chairman...
Well, no, you may be in Anchorage, but you're going to be right there anyways. All you got to do is hand it to them. I mean, it's not like you can... they can go. They got to put them on a list to change them anyways. I imagine they don't do it all the same day.
Mr. Chairman, this is my final point, is that the only local telephone company that testified on this legislation was Matsu Telephone. They testified in opposition to that provision, and that type of provision, labor and commerce, and there's been no testimony from the local exchange carriers today, so since they're the ones most affected, I would presume that they would want to have an opportunity to take a look at that procedure and see whether that's something that they think is workable, because it does put an extra burden on them.
It puts an extra burden on them to keep the signature on file? You're stretching it. I mean, I don't understand the burden, Reed. Representative Bruckman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I still feel very strongly about consumer protection. I mentioned earlier that I have some teenagers, and they have used the telephone easily to charge to my account. And I certainly would want the protection of something in writing. And there perhaps, I agree, there it would be a burden on the local telephone company, but it's up to them to flip the switch on who I choose to use as a long-distance carrier. So I think that's a very appropriate spot. For it. But I would demand, I would not let this bill move out of committee unless there were written authorization from the consumer on their intent of which carrier to use. I think it's extremely important. And again, there was backup material in the Labor and Commerce Committee that I don't see in this committee that mentioned some of the problems in the past with the different exchanges. I'd like to see that.
I should note that they have called and asked for us to come caucus. Representative,
two things. You had indicated that you want to put in the new CS subsection D from Labor and Commerce, and I think then you should also put in subsection E, which defines the word request, which is used on lines 14 and 15. I think those two subsections go together, Mr. Chairman.
Line 16.
I'm sorry.
Page 2.
There was a change also. It said, besides just request, it said, or request for change. Just two different meanings.
I have a question. And this is, I think this, as long as we are getting a draft done, there may come a question. A free speech commercial. The question is an issue of free commercial speech here. You're saying that unless the company has been certified, they can't make a written, they can't collect written requests. And that comes under a free speech issue, whether you have a right to go and solicit. I suspect that the state has a valid interest in ensuring that the company is fit and able.
Let me respond to that right now because we're out of time. Before it was restricted, they couldn't request until they applied for an application. So you were restricting it then, too.
No question about that.
So
the same
if you
issue.
Could restrict it then, you could restrict it this way.
Well, wait a minute. Is that current law that they can't, they have to have applied? Or is that new?
Oh, no, that was in the regulations also.
Okay, this restricts it even further. Mm-hmm. And I think that when the staff gets that drafted, they should just check with the drafter. I don't think we need to have it in writing, that that is constitutional. And the other question would be, if it's a sufficient interest, do we need a written legal opinion or a legislative finding that the legislature finds that only certificated carriers should be permitted to solicit requests because the public necessity is served in some manner by that? Because that is a free speech issue.
Yeah, and on hindsight, perhaps just applying to the commission, they're then on notice that this company is doing this solicitation, and if it's a scam or a company that's not fit and able, I would think APUC then would make an effort to notify the consumers.
Okay, we're going to recess until after floor section. It is 6:35. We want to adopt this new committee substitute.
Fourth.
I left my folder in the other room.
And we still have that constitutional conceptual amendment.
I know. She was writing it. 289. I need the bill because.
Which version?
I just.
What if the staff can just take it? The staff can just take it to Larry.
Okay, I'm here.
Just to find you.
I'll be at the house by now.
Okay, the new approved. It still has F, but they will get us the F-less one.
This is out, and it has the grandfather clause in it. Any objections to moving the bill? Make a motion?
I move.
Moved by Representative Greenberg to move a new committee substitute for HB 289. Is there objections? Hearing no objection, there is a new committee substitute. Move the bill. Representative Breckman?
If I saw it, I'd go individual rec. Yeah, hold it.
There is a motion to move the bill with individual recommendations. Hearing no objections, new committee substitute with HB 289 is moved with individual recommendations. We're adjourned until tomorrow at 4 o'clock.
And that's the...